Now, in the wake of a second major data breach, the Office of Management and Budget is giving agencies 30 days to make critical fixes. OMB is ordering agencies to take four specific steps to better protect data and networks. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller joins me now with details about the administration's latest cybersecurity effort. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
So is this a matter of too little, too late, or were they on this all along? What's going on here?
Right. So I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think that they've been on this for a long time. You know, OMB does not put out policy, and this is not a guidance or a memorandum per se, but they don't do something without a lot of thought behind it. You know, Tony Scott, the federal CIO, or whoever sits in that chair, doesn't wake up Thursday morning or Friday morning and go, let's put out a policy today. There's a lot of vetting. There's a lot of discussion with the CIO council. That's the way they've worked all along. So I think this is something that has been in the works for quite a while, and it just happened to come out Friday when they announced yet another hack that made this $4 million look small compared to the potential $14 million.
And also we found out that there's a second breach, correct?
That's what I'm talking about. That second breach that came out on Friday, the news that kind of broke out between Friday and over the weekend. So what OMB is asking agencies to do is over the next 30 days, four different steps. Number one, fix all critical vulnerabilities in their systems within 30 days. Now, this is something, Tom, we reported back on June 8th first. We got word that the Homeland Security Department had signed off on a binding operational directive. We talked a little bit about that on your show. And basically, this is now part of this cybersecurity sprint. The other three areas that OMB wants agencies to focus on is tighten the policies around privileged users. Those are your systems administrators. Those are your people who have access to everything in your network. Basically, what OMB is saying is PIN and password for those people is no longer acceptable. You need to go above and beyond. You need to go to two-factor authentication. You need to go to whatever will be stronger so those people cannot get hacked or their identity stolen so easily. The other thing related to that, agencies are told to dramatically accelerate the implementation of smart identity cards for logical access, meaning using those smart HSPD-12 cards to log onto your computer, to your network, to your systems. Agencies have not done a good job. I think OMB reported back in December that government-wide, the number is something around 41-42%. And in the story that we have posted on federalnewsradio.com, we have a whole list of all the agencies that are way, way, way behind, including some surprises like Veterans Affairs, State, Justice, Interior, Transportation, SBA, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They're all below, I think, something like 30, 35, 40%. All right. And finally, Tom,
sure.
the last piece of this policy is the agencies need to deploy indicators provided by DHS to scan systems, to scan their logs, to detect attacks or the possibility of a breach. So four basic things all within the next 30 days.
I mean, in many ways, these are four basic things that should have happened 20 years ago at some level.
Well, that was a real quick time. It's four basic things that you and I have been talking about for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So they've been trying to do these things and to different levels of success, absolutely.
And I guess so now that the question is, if everybody uses an HSPD-12 card to get access to networks, would that have prevented this particular breach, the loss of the SF-86 data and the loss of the 14 million federal employees' personal data? I mean, do they understand the vector by which that happened well enough to be able to tell agencies what to do to prevent that particular type of thing from happening again?
Listen, Tom, as we've talked about many times, I'm not sure anyone can ever prevent that type of breach, right? I mean, you could turn your computer off, you know, bury it in a lead, you know, underground in a lead bunker, and that would make it safe and put guards around it. But that's about it, right? That's the old discussion we've always heard. But what the Defense Department has seen over the last, you know, 10 years requiring the use of what they call their CAC, Common Access Card, they saw huge dramatic decreases in the number of basic cyber attacks against their systems once they required their employees to start using the cards. And that's one thing that OMB, I'm not sure why they didn't ever become more forceful with over the years. And this is not this administration. This started with the Bush administration. I know Karen Evans is a frequent listener, and she's a frequent guest on the show, but I've talked to her many times about this, asking her, why didn't you mandate HSPD-12 cards for logical access? And she says, we did, and we can go through the history, Tom, a little bit, but long story short is because agencies haven't used it, that let them more vulnerable to attack, would have stopped the opium attack. It's so hard to say.
It truly is. And let's move on a moment here, Jason, because in your Inside the Reporter's notebook, just now published online at federalnewsradio.com, the OPM's contract that it has let for credit monitoring, the company sending out those emails to all the federal employees they think are affected. There are questions about that contract coming up this morning.
Absolutely. You know, when I first saw the contract, it was a $20 million deal to a company called Windvale. They subcontract to CSID, which is providing the credit monitoring services. And that's the email that a lot of feds are getting, CSID.com. That's where it's coming from. That's your credit monitoring service. Now, when you look at the contract, it looks all well and good, except for all of a sudden things started to jump out at me, such as OPM released the request for quotes on May 28th at 11:33 a.m. The response date was May 30th at 11:59 p.m. So roughly about 36 hours they left it open for. That is not a lot of time. The second thing that jumped out, Tom, is was this a how did they award the contract? They seemed to go through the full and open on FedBizOps, which is great, except for why didn't they use the credit monitoring blanket purchase agreement that GSA runs that was set up back in 2006 in the post Veterans Affairs Department incident when, you know, the data of 26 million feds or veterans was lost. That started some head scratching. So I checked with some procurement experts, both in and out of government, people who know procurement like in the FAR, and everyone that I asked said, yeah, this just doesn't look good. Now, the question is, how many bids did OPM actually get? Did they get three or four bids? Well, if they did, then this is a fair contract, and it was just a quick turnaround time, and it was maybe a little sloppy. If they only got one bid, that really does lead some head scratching and wondering if this was a wired contract or a contract that was definitely pushed toward a specific company. Now, Tom, it's hard to say if it was or wasn't because OPM has not responded to multiple requests for comments, asking more details about how many bids they got, how many people, why was it such a quick turnaround, why didn't they use the BPA? But there are patterns you see in federal procurement that these experts saw, and they said this just looks this. You know what I mean, Tom? If it smells rotten, it usually is rotten, but we need more evidence.
All right. Well, by the way, we're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. But could you also maybe surmise that because of what was going on and reports coming out almost daily about the extent of this breach, OPM probably feels under siege, and you could even say this is something of a national emergency, given the national security implications of the loss of all that SF-86 data.
Correct.
And so maybe everybody's improvising here.
Well, you still have rules and regulations to follow when it comes to procurement. Let's be clear on that. And yes, there are urgent and compelling needs for procurement. And one procurement expert said, yes, you could have done that, but the contract would have just been for 1 year and you would have properly justified it to, you know, back to the contracting community. Neither of those things were done. I mean, this is a five-year contract for $20 million. In fact, Tom, one procurement expert I talked to, Bill Shook, said if he would advise a client, now he's not, but if he would, he would tell them it's protestable because even though maybe the OPM would not stay the award, like under GAO rules, sometimes you do, but because of this urgent, compelling need, but he goes, the out years are definitely something that someone could compete for. The other piece, Tom, I did do some more checking. I asked some of the other identity credit monitoring companies if they were approached by OPM. Only one responded, and that was a company called Barack Reports. They're out in Massachusetts, Framingham. I think you know that area of the world a little bit.
I do.
And I talked to Judith Leary, who is the president of Barack Reports. She says she handles all their government work. And she said that we did not receive the RFQ from this particular breach from OPM or any government agencies. There was potentially our RFQs that you could respond within 24 hours, but she goes, and they would have bid on this, but they didn't know this was existing. In fact, I sent her the RFQ and said, oh, here's the link, and she hadn't even seen it before. I also reached out to the two other holders. Barack Reports is one of three on the GSA BPA. I also reached out to Equifax and Experian. Equifax did not only responded with, I'm sorry, Equifax did not respond to numerous requests, and Experian, their spokeswoman said they don't, under a non-disclosure agreement with clients and potential clients, they don't disclose if we participate in contract bids. So it's hard to say for sure whether they bid or not. But it would seem to me that you would, you know, if you have a BPA set up for this reason to act quickly, that's what you would use. And because they didn't use it, because it's unclear how many bids they got, because of all the pieces that these procurement experts saw, that's why I think there's some questions that need to be answered. And let me be clear, Tom, it's not just me bringing this up. I, you know, Senator Jim Lankford, the member from Oklahoma, who is the chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee on Regulatory Affairs and Federal Management, are asking these questions as well. Remember, he sent 9 questions to OPM middle of last week. And I heard from his spokesman who said there are some questions in terms of how this contract was awarded, and he wants his answers. You know, obviously, he gave OPM a date of June 22nd.
Wow. So any question, what is OPM saying? And have there been questions about whether Catherine Archuleta is sufficiently on top of this whole thing?
I have not heard a thing from OPM. Again, I've reached out to them many times asking them for more comment, for any. Just tell me how many bids. I even called the contracting officer listed on the RFQ and said to him, listen, I don't need a quote. I don't need to anything. Just tell me how many bids you got. And he goes, I can't. Answers are being prepared. And he said, you know, he basically had to say goodbye. Listen, if they got 4 bids, and again, this whole point is moot. But because, again, this goes back to the transparency that I think a lot of people are frustrated with about what's happening with this breach, not just with OPM, but the entire process.
Yeah, I guess if you look at credit monitoring as essentially a retail service that is done individual by individual, the question is, why didn't they get 6 of the top credit monitoring firms and just offer an open market and let employees choose who they want?
Like that's healthcare. Another good question.
I mean, that's how I would have done it, but they didn't ask me.
They didn't ask you.
All right. Well, just very briefly, we only got a minute left, Jason. I wanted to ask you about another memo from Ann Rung on reverse auctions.
And sure enough. This has been in the works for like 15 years, right? I mean, you don't realize that Ann Rung has not been in as OFPP administrator for 15 years.
I think she was in junior high 15 years
she
ago.
May have. One of us has. But interesting enough, Tom, in 2000, Ken Oscar, you probably remember him, he was acting deputy administrator of OFPP. He told a government executive audience, this was a story I dug up, that they would issue reverse auction guidance soon. Then in 2007, Congress ordered OFPP to issue guidance through the National Defense Authorization Bill. And then again, Congress, GAO came up with a report in 2012 saying that they need guidance. There was letters. They need to have guidance. So OFPP finally issues this guidance. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of there. And I think that's frustrating to both people on the Hill, and it's frustrating to vendors. So I think, you know, we have a link to the guidance on federalnewsradio.com.
All right. Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
My pleasure.